It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR and at www.wrir.org. I'm your host, Marty Wegebright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
I think there's about 5.5 million licensed drivers in Virginia, some number like that. And the figures she's given to me before would indicate that after you reduce the number of actual suspensions for the fact that somebody might have two suspensions and therefore you have to factor it down to get to the number of persons, you're still looking at about 500,000 or so people who might be suspended. So you can assume that as you're driving down the road, one out of every 10 people might be driving. If they're driving on suspended, they are driving, that's one-tenth of the people that you're meeting.
Millicent Ford, Director of Driver Services at DMV, and Randy Rollins from Drive to Work explain how driver's licenses get suspended and how they get restored. And during this week's News You Can Use, you'll learn how the number of Virginians enrolled in Affordable Care health plans doubled in 6 weeks. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 237, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM Richmond Independent Radio and online at www.wrir.org, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. A final 6-week surge in enrollment has more than doubled the number of Virginians who have obtained health insurance through the Affordable Care Act. A total of 216,356 people in the state purchased coverage through healthcare.gov, an online marketplace that is a key part of the new federal health care law. The numbers, announced earlier this month by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, update a tally that stood at 102,815 in March. Virginia is one of 36 states using the federally run website, which all but crashed when it was launched on October 1. Technical problems with the site were mostly fixed by December, and enrollment picked up steadily after that before spiking in the weeks before a March 31 deadline. Nationally, more than 8 million people have selected health plans through the marketplace. Opponents of the health care law contend that only 2/3 of those enrolled in plans paid their first monthly premium, but government officials cited reports by insurers that 80% to 90% completed the purchase of their plans by paying their first premium. The numbers exceeded expectations both nationally and in Virginia, where officials had projected about 100,000 signups in the first year. Figures released by the government cover the first enrollment period from October 1 through March 31, plus people who were allowed to sign up through April 19 under special circumstances. Officials say it will take several more years of enrollment before the system is running as planned. In Virginia, there were an estimated 1 million uninsured people in Virginia before the subsidized insurance became available, and healthcare navigators will continue working in offices around the state to get more of them covered during future enrollment periods. Of those who signed up in Virginia, about 66,000, 31%, were between the ages of 18 and 34, representing the healthy demographic that is needed to help pay for the treatment of the older and usually sicker population. Nationally, those young adults made up 28% of the total enrollment. A large majority of the newly insured in Virginia, 82%, received financial assistance. Private insurance sold through the government-run website comes with subsidies for people with incomes between the federal poverty guidelines and four times that level. Federal officials also said 36,556 Virginians enrolled in Medicaid or children's health insurance programs. Virginia has not expanded eligibility, so the additional sign-ups reflect eligibility under the state's established standards. With this week's news you can use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. Close to 1 million Virginia drivers have suspended licenses. Millicent Ford, Director of Driver Services at DMV, and Randy Rollins from Drive to Work explained how driver's licenses get suspended and how they get restored at the 2013 annual statewide Legal Aid Conference, and the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show was there. Here are their comments.
When I look back at fiscal year 2012, the court ordered a total of 239,305 suspensions for non-payment of court fines related to motor vehicle-related convictions. And so those are individual suspension orders, and a customer, one person may have more than one. So those represent orders issued with the understanding that that doesn't represent 200 and so thousand individuals. Related to fines and cost suspensions for non-motor vehicle-related convictions, there's about 162,199 fines and cost suspensions issued in fiscal year 2012. Not nearly the same volume, but last year there were a little over 5,000 suspensions for unsatisfied and default judgments, a little less than 10,000 suspensions for non-payment of child support, about 5,700 suspensions for convictions of operating uninsured motor vehicles, and a little over 47,000 suspensions for failure to maintain the required proof of financial responsibilities. Suspensions or revocations of driving privilege is another barrier when the court has entered a conviction of driving while intoxicated. For the first offense, of course, it results in a one-year revocation of driving privilege. The second, a conviction of a DUI second, results in a three-year revocation. Conviction of a DUI third offense results in an indefinite revocation, making that person eligible for restricted privileges in 3 years and for restoration in five. They would have to petition the court to get both of those privileges. And it's also important to know that in a case where a person accumulates three DWI convictions within a 10-year period, DMV is required to take the same action as if the court actually convicted that person of a third offense DUI. The law requires a six-month revocation for each conviction or deferral of a non-motor vehicle-related drug violations. Typically, customers who have a drug revocation order, along with, say, a fines and cost suspension order, opt to delay paying their fines and costs, thinking that, well, I'm going to be revoked for 6 months anyway. Why should I put my money out to pay the fines and costs now? Why not delay until 6 months passes, and then I can pay the required fee and get my privileges back? Only to find out when they think the 6 months has passed, it has not even begun, because there's the requirement that the drug revocation run consecutively with anything else that they may already have in effect. So delaying it does not have the impact that they think it would. In cases where the court convicts a person of driving while suspended or revoked under 46.2-301, this is a non-DUI type driving suspended, if the court directs the DMV to run that period of time that they impose for, you know, based on the driving suspended conviction, let's say they're convicted and they impose a 90-day suspension. Well, if they direct DMV to run that 90 days consecutively, DMV is going to when we receive the record of that conviction and that suspension order along with that directive, we're going to look to see what suspension was in effect on the date that that person got charged with driving suspended. If at the time of that offense they were suspended for some indefinite reason, fines and costs, failure to complete a driver improvement clinic, unsatisfied judgment, whatever the indefinite reason is, we're going to delay the time running, that 90 days running, until they have complied with that requirement. And so that's another element that adds some level of complexity to the situation.
Well, good morning, everyone. My name is Randy Rollins. A little bit of a background first about Drive to Work. Drive to Work is a nonprofit corporation that was formed in 2007. Its purpose is to assist low-income and previously incarcerated persons to restore their driving privileges so they can drive to work. That's the primary mission. And what we do is provide legal assistance to persons who are eligible for that program to get them their licenses back. To illustrate what we're talking about, I want to tell you a little bit about a client we've had whose name was Edward. Edward came to Drive to Work in early 2013. He asked us to help him with his license situation because he had a very complex record. The first thing we did was we asked for DMV, asked DMV to provide a copy of his compliance summary, which Millicent has one here, that identifies the reasons why he was suspended and what he has to do to get his license back. And the second thing is his driving record itself, which is the detail underlying the compliance summary. Now, Edward had a complex case. First of all, he had fines in 8 different jurisdictions. He had suspended licenses from 2 other jurisdictions that the court had ordered because he had been driving on suspended. He needed to do a driver improvement clinic. And there may have been 1 or 2 other things he had, but the basic rule of the game in trying to get a person's license back is to think that every item on the compliance summary has to be addressed and removed before DMV is going to give that person any kind of a license, whether it's a restricted or whether it's a full license. So step number 1, identify the information you need. Step number 2 is figure out a strategy whereby you can get all those things eliminated before he goes back to DMV. Not uncommon, as in the case of Edward, to have somebody with fines in multiple jurisdictions. Each of those jurisdictions have their own policies with respect to how to deal with the fines, for example. So it requires some knowledge of the individual jurisdiction or going to ask them about it. Millicent indicated that the number one reason for people being suspended was because they owe fines. I think there's about 5.5 million licensed drivers in Virginia, some number like that. And the figures she's given to me before would indicate that after you reduce the number of actual suspensions for the fact that somebody might have 2 suspensions and therefore you have to factor it down to get to the number of persons, you're still looking at about 500,000 or so people who might be suspended. So you can assume that as you're driving down the road, 1 out of every 10 people might be driving. If they're driving on suspended, they are driving. That's one-tenth of the people that you're meeting. Now, hopefully all of them are not driving, but some of them are. And what happens when they are driving is, number one, they're usually not insured. Certainly they probably wouldn't be insured. They have not taken the DMV test, and they're probably looking over their shoulders for the blue lights. So they're distracted. And so getting them back in a licensed position does 2 things. One, it prevents them from creating a hazard to the road. And secondly, it enhances their life significantly. In our work, we see that when a person gets their license back and they already have a job, they frequently can see themselves getting a promotion or a raise, increasing their pay by 25%. Some people who have skills like an electrician or a plumber or anybody else who needs to drive to get to a job can see their pay go up by double because the employer no longer has to employ a driver to take this person to the job site. So both from a standpoint of the individual's economic strength and well-being and their personal identity, as well as reducing the risk they're not going to get arrested or cause an accident again because they're not licensed, it's a very significant thing for them to do to get their license back.
You've been listening to Millicent Ford, Director of Driver Services at DMV, and Randy Rollins from Drive to Work, explaining how driver's licenses get suspended and how they get restored at the 2013 annual statewide Legal Aid Conference of Virginia Legal Aid Attorneys. We'll be back in a moment. We continue now with the remarks of Millicent Ford, Director of Driver Services at DMV, and Randy Rollins from Drive to Work, explaining how driver's licenses get suspended and how they get restored at the 2013 annual statewide Legal Aid Conference.
It is important to understand the difference between indefinite suspensions and fixed suspensions. And before I get to that, you know, just to follow up on what Randy said, that it's important to understand that there are laws which direct or require the court to take certain action, but there are also separate administrative statutes that govern what DMV is supposed to do. Sometimes, even though the court did something else, there are times when a person may leave court thinking that the only thing that's the only action that's going to be taken is what is that action that the court advised them of. Typically tries not to relay what additional DMV requirements may be imposed for fear of misleading the person. But it is important to understand that there are court-imposed requirements and there are administrative requirements, and those requirements are dictated by the statute. As it relates to indefinite versus fixed suspensions, indefinites are basically those suspensions and revocations that are going to remain in effect until the driver complies with certain requirements. Might be completion of a driver improvement clinic, payment of their fines and costs, satisfying a judgment, completing an intervention interview that's required when they get two convictions for driving suspended. But those are basically considered the indefinite ones, as opposed to fixed suspensions that are for a specific period of time. I do need to say that even though a suspension may be for a fixed period of time, it may still continue because that person then has not paid their DMV reinstatement fee. So while the period of time a person may be suspended for say 90 days, that person will remain suspended until they also pay the reinstatement fee. So it could extend longer than the fixed period. In terms of the suspension versus a revocation, a suspension is basically a temporary withdrawal of a person's privilege to operate a motor vehicle for a specified period of time or indefinitely until a person complies with the outstanding requirements imposed by the court or DMV. The driving privilege can be reinstated once the person serves the specified time or complies with the outstanding requirement, and then the license can be reissued or, if it's then expired, renewed. A revocation, on the other hand, is a termination of that person's driving privilege. The revocation also may be for a specified period of time, or it can be indefinitely where they have to petition the court for restoration. When the revocation period ends, however, and they've complied with all the other requirements, that driver has to then reapply for a license, meaning they have to go through the testing process, complete the vision, complete the knowledge, and the road skills test in order to be relicensed. It's important to know that a person's driving privilege, their privilege to drive, can be revoked even though they don't actually hold the license. They've never been licensed. It just depends on what types of convictions have been imposed. The statute provides for a revocation of their privileges, even though they may or may not have a driver's license.
Okay, let's turn to the big reason why most people get suspended, and that's the fines. Again, I'm going to use my Edward example. He had fines in 8 different courts. First thing you got to do is find out how much those fines are. And DMV does not have that information. They know of the conviction, they know the case number, they know what it was for, but they don't have the record of how much it is. And the only way you can get that information is to call the court or the collection agency for that court to determine what the current amount is. So that's what we did in Edward's case. We called and developed a spreadsheet that showed all his fines in all these different courts. In his case, now this is an extreme example. Most people would not have fines of this size. His total fines were $24,000. Now that did consist of a good deal of restitution because he had been convicted not just of something like, driving on suspended or a petty crime, maybe an assault. He had actually been convicted of some embezzlement and fraud cases, so there was a good deal of money involved in that. And when the court made its decision to convict him, they also required him to pay restitution, and that was built into the court fines. I don't know if it even is a typical amount of court fines that people owe, because it so much depends on two things. One, how many courts they have, and secondly, how long it's been since they got the fine. The state charges interest on the fines at 6% while they're outstanding. The only time they don't do that is if a person sets up a payment plan, and that stops the interest on the whole fine. Or if the person has been convicted of a particular offense and he goes to jail for that offense, they won't charge him for interest on the fine while he is in jail for that offense. On the other hand, if he has other fines that are outstanding at the time he went to jail, the interest on that does not stop. So interest on lots of these fines could continue to accrue. On the one he went to jail for, it wouldn't accrue until he got out of jail. Now, there are a couple ways to address this issue, not too many people, maybe Donald Trump, but not very many people would have $24,000 available just to pay off these fines. So what you need to do is think of pay plans as a means of getting those off your record. Once a pay plan is set up by a court and they notify DMV that they've done this, DMV will remove that fine from the person's record, even though the full amount has not been paid. If they set up a valid pay plan that the court has accepted, then the court will issue a receipt called a DC-30 form to DMV, and DMV will pull it off the record. It will go back on the record, though, if the person defaults on the payments. And there are two kinds of payment plans to be considered here. One they call an installment plan. Usually it involves a down payment and then a monthly payment. So long as the person makes the monthly payment, that fine is going to stay off the DMV's record. He won't be suspended due to that fact. The other form is called a deferred payment plan. And this is like a balloon payment on your mortgage. You get a mortgage and you don't have to pay anything, maybe the interest only, until the end of the term, and then you pay the whole thing off. This is something courts favor, but I don't, because somebody who's on a payment plan is not likely to be thinking 3 years down the road and saving up his money in his own account to pay that. It's much better to be making installments along the way. At least that's reducing it as you go along. Another way to address the fine issue, it is more cumbersome, but it is also available, is you can obtain a restricted license to drive to and from work and from some other specified places that the statute allows to drive while that fine is still outstanding. However, this particular restricted license does not last but for a 6-month period. After that 6 months, it expires, and you have to go back and get it renewed again if that's what you want to do. That's available to people who really do not have any funds to make, but they may have a job. To get a restricted license, you got to tell where you're going to go. And so if you don't have a job, you can't be saying, well, you're going to a job, because you don't have a place to specify as where you're going. And the purpose of the restricted license is not to get around the idea that you're suspended. It's to provide a I call it a relief valve. So if a person does have a job or does have a school that they are attending, or they do have to attend VASAP or other things that are specified, they can do these things even though they continue to be suspended.
You've been listening to Millicent Ford, Director of Driver Services at DMV, and Randy Rollins from Drive to Work, explaining how driver's licenses get suspended and how they get restored at the 2013 annual statewide Legal Aid Conference. This is the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. The Code of Virginia lists 10 specific factors to be considered in determining child custody, but which are the most important and which are less important? Join us next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when family law attorney Sandra Bowen talks about how judges decide child custody cases. That's law for the rest of us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Redgrave.